So at the beginning of the hour, we were having this kind of Mount Olympus discussion about how producers create content, technology breeds unanticipated consequences, platforms of big data are devoid of morality, and deep learning computers don't much care if you're an angel or an arch villain. We'll take the actual case of the database and watchdog tool from ProPublica called Prescriber Checkup. By detailing the prescribing habits of hundreds of thousands of doctors across the country, ProPublica hoped that journalists might have a comprehensive source and a tool for tracking the opioid and prescription painkiller epidemic. Using Prescriber Checkup, Americans could select a responsible doctor who might responsibly prescribe opioids rather than one with a pattern of doling out painkillers with abandon. Well, ProPublica discovered that since the database started in 2013, some are using it to actually find doctors who would more willingly prescribe their drug of choice. Steve Engelberg is the editor-in-chief of ProPublica. He joins me now in the studio here at WNYC. Stephen, welcome.
Thank you.
My first comment is, this is what addicts do. They take advantage of things like this. Hello.
Yeah. No, I mean, our sort of goal in all this was a little bit broader. I mean, what we wanted to do, having obtained this Medicare data, was put up the prescribing habits of doctors of all kinds of medications so that one could do all kinds of research. I mean, one of the things that we were very interested in, for example, was we have a database of pharmaceutical company payments to doctors. And one of the great questions is, do payments influence the practice of medicine? And Big Pharma has always said, no, it doesn't. Well, until you had a database that looked at what a normal doctor in any given field does, you couldn't see whether they departed from the norm. So ultimately, what we did just this year was a story that looked at, okay, did doctors who get lots of payments tend to give more prescription drugs rather than generic? The answer was yes. So, you know, we had a sort of broad sense of how people would use this, and we believe that people did use it broadly. A narrower group, which is the opioid-seeking group, did turn out to use it in ways, we think, at least in some cases, that we did not intend.
Now, it's also the case that those users can lead law enforcement to perhaps find doctors who are contributing to the epidemic, if it indeed that is the case.
Right. I mean, one of the things that came out when we first did this, we identified the top 20 opioid sort of prescribers around the country. We discovered that a fairly large number, about half of them, were in trouble in various ways. Some of them were being had already been banned from Medicaid for abusive prescribing patterns, yet Medicare, another federal program, hadn't even looked. So one of the things that we felt would happen is that if we put this data up there, we would encourage federal authorities, regulators, law enforcement to take a closer look at something that was just being pretty much spent willy-nilly. And that did happen. So, you know, again, we felt like we had a lot of people using this for the purpose it was intended. And then as we discovered recently, some that were not.
How do you keep track of the way people use your database?
Well, it's a little bit unclear. You can't really tell the intent or motive of somebody coming to a website. Our analytics allow us to look at some of the web searches, and I have to say some of them were a little suspect, like, how do I find a doctor who will prescribe me anything? That seems like somebody who may not be looking for medical purposes. But it is true, and it's very important to emphasize, that people who are coming to this site have a potential mix of motives. We've had a sort of pendulum swing in the pain medication field, and today it's probably harder to get opioids than it used to. So what if you have chronic pain and you can't find a doctor who's willing to treat that? So I think some people use the website to find sort of legitimate treatment for legitimate problems. Other people are using it because they've become hooked and they're trying to abuse the drugs. And so our response was to try to put on each of the warning pages where this occurs a warning label explaining the sort of consequences of these drugs, the background of the epidemic, and so on.
Is this taking place outside of insurance? For instance, the Schedule I or Controlled Substances Act makes it difficult to get prescriptions on a greater frequency than insurance will reimburse. And so you can't, you know, upload or get multiple prescriptions because they're keeping track of all of that.
Yeah, I don't think we have clarity on what's happening at the end-use phase. What we do know is that the amount of traffic on this particular news application is pretty heavy and, you know, a bit heavier than we would expect. And so, you know, by our very rough calculation, we're thinking that about 25% of the people coming to the site are looking for opioids. And of that group, some, maybe a majority, maybe not, you know, are looking to abuse it. How they do that, I think, is a reporting question, and it's the kind of thing we have been writing about over the years about this.
Can you tell how people are using prescription opioids versus the heroin actual crisis itself, people getting heroin off the street?
It's really hard to say. I mean, I do think we know from our reporting that people who are buying heroin often buy it because it's cheaper and easier to get than the prescription drugs. As you say, there are some things in the system now that prevent people from, you know, just openly abusing it, getting multiple prescriptions and so on.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. Steven Engelberg is the editor-in-chief of ProPublica. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.